Good morning, and welcome to the broadcast of the First Christian Church of Pittsfield. The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. Every Sunday morning, there is Sunday school offered for all ages at 9:15. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.
We just laid foundation for our series in the book of Daniel, and we looked at how to respond in integrity to a culture that becomes less and less tolerant of individuals who take a stance for Jesus Christ. And you don't have to look very long or far to find examples of the cultural slide that we're experiencing. What we're finding out is to hold a biblical worldview, we'll just name a few topics on the sanctity of life, on marriage and sexuality, puts oneself more and more in the crosshairs of this new cultural movement that we described last week, which is moral relativism. And so several months ago, a couple of examples of that. Several months ago, there was an article in the Christian Post, and it detailed the controversy that is going on right now around some 50-plus public libraries that are funding drag queen story hours for children, but they refuse to accept an offer from a Christian author to have a story hour to read a Christian-themed children's book. Some libraries would allow room usage, but they did not support the event like they supported the drag queen story hour. And it raised a big fuss, and that's still being worked out. Some of that happened in Nashville, was one of those sites. Christianity Today reported that the UK's, the United Kingdom's largest teachers union just recently demanded that their schools support a drag queen story time. And now here in the United States, there is a large debate in our nation on the appropriateness of children having exposure to certain content. And specifically where this war is played out more and more in school districts across our country has to do with curriculum content, specifically sex ed curriculum content. And groups are vocalizing opposition to programs, and they are stating their concern that young children are being exposed to content that they feel is, quite frankly, age inappropriate and could foster an intense level of confusion. Sadly, what we're seeing is their concerns that young children should not be exposed to such explicit material has been brushed aside and labeled as hateful, as anti-LGBTQI prejudice. So my question here today, and as we continue our series and as we're beginning to look into the book of Daniel, is why is there such a focus on young people? Why is there such a focus on children? That's the topic that we're going to look at, because here in the book of Daniel, some things are kind of jump off the page as I've gone through it over the past several weeks. So a little bit of background, the book of Daniel. When we approach the book of Daniel, where is this in the context of history? And I'm not going to go through an entire Old Testament. We're just going to jump on about 1000 BC, which is King David is on his throne, and Israel is in the height of his glory. David's heirs, after David's pass, his heirs are all kind of vying for a piece of the throne. His son Solomon is on the throne. And then after that, there's this wrestle within the family of who's going to be king. And the kingdom splits. The north 10 tribes, Israel, and the southern 2, Judah. And they're both struggling to follow God. And so God sends prophets and he warns them, hey, don't turn away from me. If we read the major prophets and the minor prophets, he's usually addressing some issues of individuals who have turned their back on God, and his heart is, come back and be faithful to me. Reject the gods of the lands in which I have given you. Now, Israel, the northern kingdom, had a long line of evil kings. And finally, in 722, the Assyrian conquests took their capital, Samaria, and the northern kingdom was totally destroyed, was wiped out, and they were dispersed. Now, Judah lasted a bit longer. Again, they only had a few good kings, but their apostasy led them away from the protection of God. They rejected his protection. They rejected his ways. And so they ended up being conquered in the first wave of attacks. There were several waves, but in 605 BC, Jerusalem fell to the Babylonians, to King Nebuchadnezzar. And a first group of Jewish individuals were taken into captivity. There's actually three waves of this captivity. And among them was a 15-year-old boy and three of his friends. And that's what we're going to pick up here in Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. We read, In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the vessels of the house of God. Okay, these are some of the gold vessels that were in the temple. Okay, there was still, prior to this, there was still worship that was being allowed to happen, even though this Babylonian menace was there. And we see some things going on here. It says, and he brought them into the land of Shinar. Now, this is the Babylonian land where they worshiped the god Baal. Okay. Bel, the god Bel. It says, and he brought them into the land of Shinar, into the house of his god, and placed the vessels in the treasury of his god. Then the king commanded Ashpenaz, the chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of nobility. Now look who this is. Youths without blemish, of good appearance and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace and teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. Okay, so this is the first wave of the fall of Jerusalem, of the fall of Judah. And as we studied in Ezekiel, you remember our series in Ezekiel earlier, where we talked about Ezekiel sitting by the Kibar Canal. Well, I'll kind of go back. This is the same captivity here. It's interesting to see that in this first wave, a specific strategy was employed. We read in Daniel, who was targeted in the first wave? And who was it? Youths of promise. Youths without blemish, of good appearance and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace. In other words, they're coming after the best and the brightest. Those who have promise, those who have potential, those who could be the next level of leadership. Isn't this an insidious strategy? And you think, well, okay, that's fine and good, but we do not live in Iraq, which, you know, Babylon at this time was modern day Iraq, and we don't live there. And I'd like to tell you, if you think that that spiritual strategy is not employed, then you are falling asleep. The strategy is still that we are dealing with a present day Babylon, a reassertion of this spirit that rejects God, that stands in contrast. Solomon once said, there's nothing new under the sun. He said that which has been will be again. And it's not so much that history just repeats itself, but I believe that the strategies that Satan uses are in fact eerily similar, as we see back then. So the thought for the topic today is, there is a war for the hearts and the minds of the next generation. That's my topic that I want to talk about today. This war that is going on, that is all around us, that we are seeing in our culture. And this war right now, I think that we're just not very perceptive. We don't realize the hearts and the minds of the next generation are being targeted. The first wave of attack, they attack the future by targeting the hearts and minds today. Now, I could cite to you poll after poll from Barna and from all kinds of poll publishing, all kinds of different polls that are showing the change in the mindset from baby boomers to millennials and then all the generations that are following. We are turning farther and farther away from, embracing a biblical-based morality. I remember, you know, it used to be that, and here I'm going to sound really old, it used to be that the curriculum was Shakespeare in the King James Bible. And nowadays, that might just get you arrested. Okay? There's lots of things that are tolerated, and there are certain things that are no longer... What used to be foundational now is no longer tolerated. And so there's a couple things that I see happening here that I feel like I want to point out, and I may step on some toes today, but I promise you, if I step on your toe, it's because it's underneath mine, because I'm stepping on mine, okay? So I'm not targeting any person. I'm trying to point out a spiritual strategy that I really think we need to wake up and be understanding that there is an attack that's coming. And the first thing that we see here is he pulled them away from Jerusalem. He pulled them specifically away from the temple. What does that mean? It means they were restricted. He restricted them from the worship assembly. You see, if we can remove individuals from the worship assembly, Babylon knew that this was important. They knew that they had to break the chain of their exposure to the wonderful worship of the Almighty God. We have to separate them from the assembly. And here they take them away from the temple. Now, I know individuals say, well, God is everywhere. I have this argument all the time with individuals who are like, hey, I'd love to see a church. Well, you know that God doesn't live in your church. Yes, I do realize that. And the church is full of hypocrites. Yes, I also do know that. And you know, I can worship God anywhere. Yes, I know you can worship God anywhere. But I also know that you should be around other people, and all of us together, not a single one. Anyone who comes into this room and thinks that we're a gathering of perfect people, you in the wrong place. All right, let me just tell you, you are in the wrong place. Okay, this is not, we all just, you know, pat each other on the back and say, how great I am, how great I am. That's not what our goal is, to come together. And the reason that we worship together is sometimes people don't want to worship with other people because they've been jerks to them all week. You know, there's something about accountability in walking with one another. Well, there's restricted from worship. Look at Hebrews chapter 10, verses 20 through 25. Let's all read this together, church family. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Let us hold fast to the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together as some are in the habit, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Look, I totally get it. I get it that folks are busy. I get it that we try everything we can to create opportunities for people to worship. You know, I'm happy to gather together to do small groups. I'm happy to gather together. We have Bible studies. We have things for those individuals whose jobs do not allow them to be together. I understand that. I mean, we offer the stream, but it's not the same. I mean, people who aren't together, I get it. It's difficult. The reason that we worship together is it makes us have to put our faith into practice. We have to be forgiving. We worship with people who get under our skin. Amen? Sometimes we're married to them, right? No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. No. My wife's not. No, she, yeah. The deal is it's something beautiful when we walk together and we are called to join together. Now, here's the problem, and here's what I see. And so we have to be careful to set a good example for the next generation. But you know what? Study and study and study has been done to say that if the father goes to church, the statistical probability of the children going to church and staying to church is astronomically high. Now, I'm not saying anything against moms, the importance of moms, not at all. Please do not feel... If any person who hears that and thinks that I just slighted moms, I don't mean that at all. And please forgive me if that's how you took it. But what I'm saying is there's something powerful when we come together. And fatherhood, you know, again, you look at studies, that anyone who wants to do some fascinating reading, read Thomas Sowell. Thomas Sowell does some pretty good cultural breaking down as far as what is happening with absentee fathers and how that affects communities. And so we don't do ourselves any any favors by trying to destroy family. And so what I want us to do is know that there is this spirit here we see in Daniel that has separated these youths of promise from the assembly. And does that happen today? Yes. How does that happen today? We have overcommitted youth and undervalued spiritual development. Please don't be offended. You know what? I know what it's like to have kids, and I know what it's like to have busy kids. I know what it's like to run that thing. I know what it's like. I know what it's like, gang, when we're thinking of their future, because I know all of our kids are going to be professional athletes. I know that. I know that, right? Yeah, I get it. Yeah, we all get it. What we have to do is you know what, parents? Those of you who've got kids of promise, you have an extra challenge to develop them spiritually. And that does happen at home. That needs to happen at home. We will partner with, that's the whole Orange philosophy, is you know, the church and family joined together. But it is critical that we do it, that we talk about the Lord, that we talk about his precepts around the table. And gang, I'm telling you that it's just getting worse and worse. And I talk to people who were before me, and we're having this trend with our kids get busier and busier and busier, and they're getting over and over and over connected and over and over and over hyperstimulated, and there is not the availability to prioritize. Everybody say prioritize spiritual development. Okay? You know, there's that stat, you know, like one in however many, you know, thousand are going to, you know, be professional baseball players, but 100%, 100,000 out of 100,000 people will stand before the Lord. Wake up. And if you think, why is it so difficult? Because I remember, you know, wrestling with that. I remember having conversations with my wife about, oh my gosh, we look at our calendar. How can we fit another silly thing in? How can we do this? And having that conversation, we have to prioritize our spiritual development of our kids. Because I tell you what, you've got them a short time, and then they're going off, which we're dealing with now. They're going off, and then that foundation gets tested. That foundation gets tested, and you're going to find out how it was built on. Was it built on with straw? Was it built upon the rock? Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6 says, train up a child in the way that he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Doesn't mean that it's going to be perfect. Doesn't mean that the issues aren't going to happen. Doesn't mean that the person doesn't have the free will to change and to reject some things. But I'm telling you now that part of the strategy of the new Babylon is to get us so over busy and over committed and undervalue spiritual development. The new Babylon, Satan is wily. And you know, he gets us to do his work for him. He's subtle. And so strategy one is divide and conquer. Get them to be too overconnected that there's no ability to prioritize spiritual development. Now, in a war, I want to tell you that there's a major strategy. One of the first things that happens when you study war, study the philosophy of war, which actually I find fascinating. One of the first things that you do is you disrupt communication. You go in and first wave happens when you're laying siege to something is you separate, you divide them, and you break off communication. Here they've done a pretty fascinating job by just pulling them away from the temple. And so we need to be aware of that. So that's the first one. That's our first R, restrict them from the worship assembly. The second one is replace foundational truths. Look what we see in chapter 1, verse 4 and 5. So they pull them away from Jerusalem. They take them here into Babylon to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and of the wine that he drank, and they were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. So step one is separate. Step two is indoctrinate. The Babylonians had an effective strategy. They taught their captured exiles a different culture, their own culture. They took the best and the brightest, and then they replaced their ideology. Now, I know that the battle for the new Babylon, it's using the same strategy. Foundational truths, as we talked about earlier, are being replaced, and biblical truths are being despised. Dr. Vody Bakum, in an interview with the Christian Post, said this. He said, "The idea that either there is no truth or that truth is a social construct, that knowledge is even a social construct, in both instances, Christianity and really anyone who proclaims that there is an absolute truth becomes an enemy of the ideology of the day." We're seeing that happen today. We're seeing that all across college campuses, that they're restricting thought, that there's no longer free speech in many ways. It's only one idea is allowed. We've seen this during major, major events in our own nation where thoughtful debate on a different perspective of a similar topic has been disallowed. Okay, now I'm not talking political, I'm talking societal. It says not only, Dr. Vody Bakum goes on to say, not only does the academy despise the gospel, but the academy also despises the biblical worldview more broadly. He goes on, for example, if you're a person who believes that there is a God who created the world, forget young earth, just a person who believes that God created the world. The response is you don't deserve to breathe, let alone call yourself an academic. The academy not only despises the gospel, but the Christian worldview, Christian cosmology, and Christian morality. He wrote a book, Dr. Vody Bakum wrote a book, The Ever-Loving Truth, about the faith in a post-Christian culture, and says this: in the early church, there was this pressure to conform to the religious ideologies of the day. So he's talking about is Rome. So people came to be followers of Jesus, and they were in the midst of a Roman culture. I've talked about that the past several weeks. He says, it's okay for you to practice your Christianity, but your Christianity can't be allowed to interfere with your Roman religion. Sound familiar? Today, we see the same thing. People are saying, listen, I don't have a problem with a Christian per se, as long as Christianity stays within the four walls of the church and doesn't try to impose itself on the broader culture. And as long as that Christianity, so I understand that. That's this whole, okay, you know, church is church and we do our little thing in here and we try not to evangelize. We try not to be judgmental out there. Okay, I understand what they're saying. I don't necessarily agree with it, but here's the next part. Not only you have to stay within the four walls of itself, don't try to impose on the broader culture, as long as that Christianity doesn't prevent you from bowing to the idols of the day. So it's not that the society around us wants us just to stay in these four walls. Stay in these four walls and you can be a Christian, as long as you're the type of Christian who will do what the rest of the culture says to do. Come on, somebody. Welcome to 2023. We're going to see here in the book of Daniel is they're going to build whatever image, and when you hear the truth, you can better bow down and worship it on the ground. And that's what we see in our culture today. He observed that the minute that Christianity caused you to oppose any of the new accepted norms, you have now opened yourself to opposition and persecution. In the example that I began our discussion with today, this ideological warfare is being waged and it's targeting the next generation. Ever wonder why, gang, there's this passion and there's vehement, that there you have to express explicit ideas and materials to younger and younger audiences, and we see it in entertainment, we see it in films, we see it in movies, we see it in TV shows, and in many extreme curriculums at our schools or throughout the nation. Have you ever wondered why is this passion to try to shove this down the throats of younger and younger and younger children? Why? My personal conviction is this is an example of the new Babylon. There's a war for the hearts and the minds of the next generation, a spiritual attack to remove us from the worship assembly and a replacing of foundational truth. And we go to our next one. And then the next R is removing God's standard. You see, followers of the Torah had, there were dietary restrictions. And so here's what they want to say. You know, not only do we want to teach you the literature and the language of the Chaldeans, we want you to eat and drink what we eat and drink, even if this means that you need to violate your own standards. And we see the removal of any standard whatsoever. Daniel and his three friends, again, they knew this. So not only is there an indoctrination, but the standard has to be removed. You have to act like the rest of us. Eat non-kosher foods. The standard of righteousness, the standard of righteous living is compromised. In other words, say you can't live like that. There's a pressure to conform to this new ideology. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 14 through 16 says, as obedient children, do not be conformed to the passions of your former ignorance, but as he who called you is what, gang? So God is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, since it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy. You see, holiness is, it shouldn't be the punchline to a joke. Shouldn't be that. And yet we have this understanding here. Let's look on here because our time is running away. Verses 6 through 7. So these individuals who were brought, among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribes of Judah. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel, he called Belteshazzar. Hananiah, he called Shadrach. Mishael, he called Meshach. And Azariah, he called Abednego. So what's the next R of this strategy of the new Babylon? He wants us to renounce our identity. You see, in the Hebrew culture, and most of us, our names have meanings. You know, you don't look at a big pit bull named Fluffy, right? If someone says, hey, here's my dog, Killer. Oh, cute little puppy. Yeah. Right? Names have meaning. And specifically in the Hebrew culture. So Daniel, we'll go ahead and hit the next one. Daniel means God is my judge. No, was there one back behind that? There you go. So Daniel meant God is my judge. Now here's how you can tell. It's kind of a cool thing. I'll do my Mr. Bourne pointer. Here we go. Okay, so you see the L there? You know, that L has to do with the name of God. El Elyon. El Shaddai, okay? So that L has a part. There's a reason everybody wants to know why all of my children have L in their name, because we wanted to invoke the name of God, okay? Eli, it's got the L, L-E, Elena, okay? That's why we did that. So he can, yeah, we had God complex, great. So Danielle means God is my judge. In other words, it is God who judges me. God is my boss. God is the ultimate judge. It is him to whom I give account. Hananiah, so Yah, that's another name. Yah, Jehovah, Yah, that's that Yah, okay? That's the Lord shows grace. In other words, the Lord is gracious, okay? Yahweh is gracious. Okay, that's Hananiah. Mishael, that's that L again. Remember the name of God. There is none like God. Who is like God? In other words, there's nothing like it. And then Azariah, that's that Yah again. Yahweh, okay, at the end, Yah. The Lord is the one who helps. Now, he changed their names. Now, this was done so they would forget who God had called them to be and they would adopt a different culture. So here's what they had to renounce their identity. So here's what the new names mean. For Daniel, which was God is my judge, it's now Bel. Remember that I said the God that they worshipped, one of their primary Babylonian gods was the god Bel. So it's now Belteshazzar. In other words, Bel's treasure or Bel's little prince. In other words, I'm no longer God is my judge. I'm not God's. I'm Bel's. It was a form of insult and a form of mockery. For Hananiah, Yahweh is gracious. It's no. Now I'm a servant of the Babylonian moon god. Now it's very interesting in this one, and I'm not trying to chase a rabbit, but there is a lot of research that shows that this god is often a goddess or a god or a goddess or a god. And some of the Chaldean gods were known as they would swap gender. I'm just saying. Okay? Mishael, none like God. Now look how they change it. No. We got to change it. You can have this. You want to try to, we have to change it. So you have to submit to the culture around you who is like the god Aku. Azariah, Yahweh helps Abednego, which is servant of Nego, which is the Babylonian god Nabu, not to be convinced with the Star Wars where Queen Amidala came from. So we won't talk about that one. No, it's a different one there. So for all you Star Wars nerds, that was a little thrown out to them. The culture twisted their names, and the culture twisted these things. Meshach actually also had kind of a lustful kind of intent. So their names and their identities were twisted. God was removed because it was offensive to the Chaldean culture. Sound familiar? So here, my final point today, Daniel 1, 8 through 10. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord, the king, who assigned your food and your drink. Why should he see that you were in worse condition than the youths who are your own age? Now look at this last part of verse 10. So you would endanger my head with the king? My final one, my final R is the R's at the end. Intimidate any resistance. You know, several years ago, there was a college athlete who won the Heisman Trophy. He was much thought after, and all of a sudden, public opinion turned on him because he had the audacity to kneel and give glory to God when he'd score a touchdown. He went from being, all of a sudden, no one could tolerate him. No one could tolerate. There's new rules that were made because he had Bible verses on his eye black. Oh, we got to take care of that. At the same time, we can have all kinds of social justice messages and we can promote those things. But when someone takes a stand for God, this is too controversial. Not long ago, we had a high school football coach who, after the games were over, would go and kneel on the 50-yard line and pray. And he went through all kinds of trouble, went through court, went through all kinds of issues. Why? Because there is a move to intimidate any resistance. My church family, Ashpenaz demonstrated that the Babylonian culture was not tolerant to others. And there is a serious spirit of intimidation against standing for the Lord. Talk to Christian teachers today. Charlotte, you can come up. Talk to Christian teachers today. All the Christian teachers who I speak with are like, well, I just kind of got to walk on eggshells. I got to be very, very, very careful with what I say and how I say it. If a student asks, well then, you know, that is brought up in legitimate conversation. But people, why? Because we're hawking those things, and yet there is an embracing of immorality and almost a propagation in certain ways. Again, there is a war. My point is here, gang, I think what we see clearly is one of the main strategies is that there is a war. There is a battle for the hearts and the minds of the next generation, and we need to be prayerful, and we need to be loving. Remember, we have to stand in the time of this cultural current that moves. We're called to stand in the character of God, loving the Lord our God with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength, and loving our neighbors as ourselves. And in that love, we stand.
The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.